Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
It's time for Diamonds. Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show. I'm your host, Dan Breslin, and this is episode 168 on flipping land remotely for huge profits with Jack Bosch. If you're into real estate investing and building wealth, congratulations, you are in the right place. My role here on the REI Diamond Show is to invite guests who specialize in building wealth, such as real estate investors and other industry service providers, and draw out the jewels of wisdom, those tactics, mindsets, and methods they've used to create millions of dollars and more in the business of real estate. And today's guest, Jack Bosch, shall not disappoint. This episode has earned a long-form gold category. That's my special highlighting selection, if you go to the replay page there. Not for its length, for being over 60 minutes, but more for its impact on me personally. So I've followed Jack for years as he's grown his land flipping business, you know, first to seven and then over eight figures. And over the years, many of the things Jack said has remained in my mind, kind of playing in the background as my personal life and business have both grown. Land deals are more important than ever right now, as COVID has essentially supercharged the land market with all the new construction that is occurring. And yet the other thing, the best part, if you are also interested in learning how to flip land deals yourself, Jack will tell you how you can get started. Shall we begin? All right. Welcome to the REI Diamond Show. Jack Bosch, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Dan?
Doing fantastic. I like to always locationally pinpoint our guests as we get started there. Whereabouts are you recording in from, and do you live there?
Both. The answer is yes. I mean, yeah, I live in, yes, I'm calling in from Phoenix, Arizona, actually Paradise Valley, Arizona, which is a part of Phoenix. And I live here. I've been living in the Phoenix area for 21 years already.
Nice. I am in Chicago, as most of the listeners already know, and I'm staring out the window here at Lake Michigan, and it's just starting to get cold, so I'm a little bit envious. I mean, you know, the fall is nice in Chicago, but, you know, this is the time of year to be in Phoenix and Arizona, right, Jack?
That is right. I envy your guys' summer and all the different wonderful things you can do there. I used to actually, when I came to this country originally, I lived in Illinois for 2 years, and one of that years in Chicago, and absolutely love that city. So it's one of my favorite places in the world.
Nice, nice. So, I mean, I already know who you are, and I've been following you for years, Jack, so I was excited, looking forward to this episode. But for, you know, everybody listening who may not know you already, do you want to kind of give the Reader's Digest version about, you know, how you got to the country, how you got into real estate, and maybe what your business looks like today?
Absolutely. Would love to do that. So quickly again, Jack Bosch. I'm originally from Germany. Grew up there, born, raised there. As in 1997, I came over to the United States to finish a college degree. I had to get an MBA here. Landed in Chicago. I went then down by train into a different part of Illinois and spent a year there. Then came back to Chicago. Well, bottom line is, to make a long story short, at that college where I went, I met my wife. My wife is also an immigrant. She's from Honduras, Central America. We own our business together. We run our business together. We're the co-CEOs of our business. And we both then got settled in Chicago, got jobs there that would pay for our green card, that it would get our green card. Because when you come from another country, you don't automatically get a permission to work here, right? But we had a work permit for a year after going to college for a year. And then my company was willing to, Michelle too, but we're willing to transfer that into a longer term visa that would ultimately get our green card. So we decided to do that. We decided to make this relationship serious. We ended up getting married. We We are now both citizens. We are still married 19 years, so almost 20 years here. And about a few years into that job, we realized that we really didn't, it was a slow realization over time, that this corporate America thing wasn't the way we wanted to do it. So, well, we that's not the way we wanted to live. I was 100% travel. I worked 80 hours a week. I was exhausted all the time. And so was Michelle. She was working in finance. I was working in consulting. And to make a long story short, we decided to do something else. We decided to start our own business, but we couldn't yet because we still didn't have that green card. So we realized we needed to start something on the side. And what we found was real estate. Where we found real estate investors, we failed forward, we dabbled in a bunch of stuff, and ultimately we found a method that we call land flipping, which is kind of like house flipping, just without the complexities of a house on it. So you're just flipping dirt. You're buying properties, or you're putting properties worth anywhere from $10,000 to $200,000 on a contract for anywhere between 5 and 30 cents on the dollar. And then we wholesaling them. We sell a finance them. We sell them with seller financing. We do assignments. We do double closings. We do wholesale deals, as mentioned. And we have done since then over 4,000 deals. And now we're also teaching it. Obviously within 1 year, within 18 months, we went from 0 to 1 million. Within 6 months of figuring this out, our green card arrived. So we were able to quit our jobs. So not a few months later, we quit our jobs and we made this our own thing. And since then we've flipped over 4,000 pieces of land. We have built a life that allows us to travel around the world, outside of COVID times, travel around the world all the time. We spend usually 3 months of the year traveling. We have a beautiful daughter, 13 years old, and very smart. And so whenever she has a school break, we're out and about traveling, and we continue doing land deals. And we now, for the last 10 years, also have been training others and coaching others on how to do that.
Nice. It is. Congratulations on quite a journey there. It's interesting, right? Because I grew up in the United States and I took it for granted. Jack, I got myself in trouble. I, you know, dropped out of college after a year or two and like had a real tough time kind of getting my shit together, for lack of a better word, for a long time. And it's amazing to see, like, you know, I took it for granted. I grew up here and everything, but here you come from Germany and it's like this fight, and you've got to stay with the corporate job and, you know, to keep the green card. And then you managed to get all that done. And I don't know. I mean, you maybe came here, you see the land flipping thing, and it's the land of opportunity. Just make a go of it. And I have a couple other guests on the show and friends too, who have immigrated to our country and like really done substantial things, the same kind of way. And I just think it's cool. You know, it's like maybe you see something different than some of us who grow up here and, you know, don't really see the opportunity. I don't know.
That is definitely true. I mean, you do see, as an immigrant, you do see things differently than those born here, because it's not normal to you. It's like, it's a different kind of world. So you come here to the U.S. and like, I remember, like, it's simple stuff. Like, I remember the first time I went to a subway store and they asked me all these questions while I was ordering. I'm like overwhelmed. Like, I was overwhelmed because, like, in Europe, you go to a sandwich store and there's like 5 sandwiches or 10 sandwiches on the menu, and that's what you order, period. Right? You don't make any changes to it. And then over there, he's like, first starting out, what do you want? They're like, I'll have this one with white wheat or what kind of bread? It's like, what the heck? What kind of options do I have? And then, so now what meat do you want on there? Or you want it warmed up or toasted? I don't even to this day know the difference between those two. Then what kind of veggies do you want? What kind of sauce? By the time I was down the line, I was exhausted. But the thing is, I learned something that this is different. So you both gather ideas of things that my former home country doesn't have that it urgently needs. These are great business opportunities to bring something from the U.S. over to there. But just likewise, you see stuff that existed in Germany that doesn't exist here. And in now translating that to real estate, we walked into the land flipping without any premonitions. Nobody told us that you're not supposed to flip land. Nobody told us that land is supposed to be something that doesn't cash flow. Nobody told us that land is supposed to be something that what people say is risky and hot and takes a long time and costs a lot of money. We just looked at a piece of land that was worth $8,000 that the guy didn't want anymore. We offered him $400 for it. He accepted it, and we sold it to the neighbor for $4,000, and that became our new normal. Right? So yes. So sometimes if the thing coming from another country brings you to a blank, brings you into this country with a blank slate, and if the blank slate without any kind of preconceived notions of what you should and should not do, you see so much more opportunity that the people that have been living here all their lives and to for whom everything on all of this stuff is normal.
Yeah, it reminds me of myself, Jack. I mean, I moved for my daughter when she was about 13. I moved from Philadelphia to Chicago. That's the reason I live in this city. And, that same newness, the same fresh perspective, like it wasn't a different country, but like I didn't know the streets. I didn't know the market, the neighborhoods. And we were already flipping houses in Philadelphia and it's nice, decent business built up there. But to have this like new broad mindset happen for me, it was really a blessing. It was like, for me, it was like God told me I had to move to Chicago so I could be near my daughter at the time, because I know it was something I would regret looking back. And she just went back to Philly for college. So, now I'm here in Chicago, like looking around why I'm here. But, but that perspective, yeah. Like you said, and seeing things through a whole new lens, like without that place where I grew up with, it was like, maybe I was stuck in the habits and the ruts and some of the things I kind of like alluded to my, rough, youth there early on, but like maybe getting out of that and having the fresh perspective is sort of the same thing that you had, completely different country to see the opportunity right there in front of me. But I digress, Jack. Let's talk about that first deal. Like, where did you get the idea to flip that land? Did you read a book? Did you take a course? Did you have a mentor? Did you just like get this idea somehow?
Well, I wish I had a mentor back then, because there was really nobody out there teaching this. Now our students are beating we made $1 million in 18 months. So now there's students who make that in 9 to 12 months out there. So because they can step in our footsteps and learn from us. But no, back then, but the way it actually worked is that we got interested in real estate to start out with. So first we did what everyone did. We looked that up. There was no HGTV at that time. There was no flip this house and all this kind of thing. So, but we still naturally, we joined the local real estate investor association, and there was a bunch of house flippers. So it's like, okay, let's go flip a house. So we went and did driving for dollars. We drove around. We tried to find all kinds of different places there. And we found a house that was like in bad shape that we needed to rehab. We contacted the owner. He agreed with us to sell it to us. But then we didn't have a clue of how to estimate repairs. We didn't know anything about houses for that matter. So we failed at that because we had estimated everything wrong. We had made an offer that was way too high, and we backed out of the deal. Next thing we got interested in was tax liens and tax deeds, because we read, obviously, Rich Dad Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki, which most people have read. And it talked about that he's getting 16% interest on his money. Now we didn't have any money. But I thought, like, 16%, where the heck do you get that? So I went and looked into that, and we saw these tax delinquent properties that people, it blew our minds that there's people, again, not knowing anything about how these things work in the U.S., it blew our minds that there are literally people willing to walk away from their properties and not pay property taxes because they either don't want them anymore, they passed away, the heirs don't want them anymore, they just don't care about them anymore. And we're like, what is going on here? So we attended some of these auctions, and we again failed because we bought them tax liens, but we bought the wrong ones. And 3 weeks later, they were redeemed, and we made like $3.82 in interest. Then we attended some tax deed auctions, and we went with $3,000-$4,000, which all the money we had at the time. My wife went over to California to attend one of these auctions and came back with the tail between the legs, because all the properties, even though the starting bid was $1,000, they ended up selling for $20,000-$25,000. So again, we couldn't get anything. But then we had a thought, and the thought was, well, what if we go and contact these people that haven't paid property taxes? What if we contact them directly? Why do we need to go to the auction? Why do we need to attend these auctions and fight with all this competition? If these people don't want these properties anymore, couldn't we go directly to them and just contact them directly? So we designed a letter. when we send out the letter to the next bunch of people, we know that we got from a list of people that haven't paid the property taxes. And then a few answers came back, and one of them was this guy that, funny enough, from the few answers that got back, quite a few actually from the answers we got back, and over time we tweaked the letter and got more and more and more answers. But the first time we got only a few answers. But the thing was, every answer was somebody owned land, not a house. So he's like, man, what are we going to do with that now? We had no idea what to do. But this one guy called us, and he basically told us the story. So he told us a story that he just got into a divorce. He wanted to initially build a house on that property, but he went through a divorce. He has like was a bitter divorce. He didn't want to be in the state anymore. He has lost his job also. So he's like, he got a new job out in Colorado. This was a deal in Arizona. He got a new job in Colorado. He wants to rebuild his life in Colorado. He wanted to kind of like cut ties with everything possible that was, that tied him to Arizona, and including that lot. And he basically told us, if you guys just make me any offer, I just want to get rid of that thing. And we were like, okay, what does any offer mean? So we looked it up. It owed a couple of $100 in back taxes. We made him a $400 offer, and he accepted right away. And we had done our research. We figured out that this is an area where the lots are worth like $8,000 to $10,000. So we bought it. We actually spent our own money. Now we actually do double closings and assignments more than that. We don't even need to spend our own money anymore. But we bought it. We went up to the property. I put a sign by for sale by owner sign on there, and the neighbor comes across the street and buys it from me right on the spot for $4,000, or at least agrees to buy it. So we're like, this is where it came from. It came from that idea to contact these people directly. So we did it again, and 2 weeks later, we got a 40-acre parcel, literally 40 acres in a rural area, but for $500. And we sold it within the matter of 2 weeks for $10,000, for a $9,500 profit. And then we started doing more and more, and soon enough, we realized, forget about houses, we thought to ourselves, because land is so much easier, because we don't have to deal with tenants, no toilets, no termites, no midnight move-outs, no estimates of repairs, no trash, no roof leaks, no foundation issues, no plumbing issues, no electric issues. None of the things that the typical rehabber or even wholesaler deals with is something we need to work with here, that we need to handle here. And since we didn't know anything about that stuff anyway, we're like, great, let's eliminate it so we never have to learn. So we just basically focus on land. And then soon enough, we also realized that there's actually way more people that want to get rid of their property that actually pay diligently their property taxes compared to what we thought. So we first focused only on the tax delinquent ones, but then in one county we couldn't get the tax delinquent list, so we got a different list and we sent out to just owners that own property, that own land, and they also called us back in droves. And we're like, oh my God, by that time we had fine-tuned our letter, we were getting 5 to 15% response rates on our letter. And we're like, holy cow, this is like crazy. And we were picking up these properties left and right. And then we realized, oh man, we don't even need to focus on tax delinquent properties. So now for the last probably 10 years, we haven't been focusing at all on tax delinquent properties because 80 to 85 of our percent of our deals have no back taxes. They're now in distress. They're free and clear. So it's different than houses. We don't go after the highly kind of stressed out property owners that are passed through on their mortgages and they need to sell and otherwise they lose their house and so on. Think, no, our properties have been in family ownership in most cases for 10, 20, 30 years. They're free and clear. The people are just sick and tired of paying property taxes. They talk to their kids. The kids don't want the property. Or they already passed away, the heirs. Now the kids own the property and they never wanted the property. Or they just need some money to buy something, and they just don't want to spend money on the property for maintenance. And I mean, you got to mow the lawn on the property probably if it's in a city every once in a while, and for property taxes. So they just don't want these properties to a degree that they literally have a garage sale mentality and just like, hey, you want it? Give me whatever you want. You'll take it. So, I mean, one of our students right now has a deal in the contract that's worth $85,000. They offered them $15,000 for the property and they accepted it. I mean, that's less than 20 cents on the dollar for an $85,000 property that they're now listing for $50,000 on the market for a quick sale.
So one of the things that I had years ago, I can't remember, I was listening to a podcast or maybe I was on a webinar with you, Jack. I'm pretty sure it came from you. But anyway, I was just like shiny object kind of thing in the beginning, a little bit like what you described with Michelle, where you're talking about, you're talking about, all right, we tried to do the flipping and then we tried and it sort of led to this next thing and then it led to this next thing. I was kind of the same way, except it seemed like it took like, I don't know, years. And mine sort of went like, well, I'm going to flip houses, and I still flip houses today. I'm going to, you know, get rentals and I'm going to do like multifamily. And I sort of was like, you know, grasping around all these things. But like, I personally was not a person who had like a decent income to begin with. And I think you were the one that said, like, you got to get a cash machine so you can get ahead financially. It's, oh my God, that's brilliant. And so I doubled down on my house flipping business. And like this year, right now to date, we've done 197, and it's the middle of October. We did like 223 last year. But that was the result of, you know, the cash machine. I don't even know, you might have made an offhand comment about that or something 6 or 7, 8 years ago or whatever it was. I heard you. But, you know, there it was. And I feel like it's been, for me, like absolutely life changing. And a lot of the people who are on my team too, to see like, oh, I got to block out all the distractions to decide this is going to be something that I can generate cash with, that I can maybe invest in some of those other things to create that passive, you know, long term, the real estate type of lifestyle where the rents or the mortgage payments, et cetera, keep coming in. Would you mind touching on and speaking to the kind of cash machine requirement in life, Jack?
Yes. In life, most people in life trying to get forward in life by focusing on the one thing that they already do, which is getting ahead in their job, which is nothing wrong with that, getting promotions and then saving up 10% of what they are, or 5 or 10% of what they do. And that is an incredibly slow way of moving ahead in life. Because when you do that, let's say you make $70,000 or $50,000 a year, and you get a raise to $70,000, what most people also do in the process is they increase their spending now a little bit. Well, now I got a little bit more money in the bank. I can buy a nicer car. I can upgrade the apartment I live in or buy a house. And soon enough, they're saving the exact same amount that they did before, which is close to zero, not much. But the expenses are now much higher. So what I mean, the way to reach success, in my opinion, the way to reach financial success needs to be disconnected from what you do for a living for most people. So you can be a high school, like one of her students, Michelle Brown is her name. She's now a coach in our organization too. She's a high school or middle school teacher. So she, you know, as a middle school or high school teacher, she probably makes $50,000 a year. She loved her job. She was in there as a teacher for 20 something years. But with that salary, you can't build financial independence. Forget about it. So what you need to do is what Michelle did, which you need to create a cash machine. We need to create something outside of what you already do as a second leg to stand on that you work on in your evenings and on weekends and your free time that generates additional cash. So you live on your job's income, but you generate all the additional cash. Now, obviously, if you're a medical doctor or an attorney and you make multiple six figures and so on and keep doing what you're doing, just keep your expenditures in check so that you actually can sock away a bunch of money and use that to invest in additional things. But what most people need to do is they need to realize that their current path, if it continues for the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years, will not lead to financial freedom. So what you need to do is they need to build something else in addition that is a cash machine. Now, in your case, then, you already have the cash machine, but you were needed to double up on it. So you're like the successful attorney and so on already. You just needed to do extra stuff to actually in order to double, triple the income coming from that so that you have the extra money on the side that you can reinvest and not just spend it, but reinvest it in additional assets that bring financial freedom for the rest of your life. And that's what we've done. We had a job. I had a job that paid me $50,000. My wife had a job that paid her another, like whatever it was, $50,000. So we were living a decent lifestyle. But at the same time, we bought a house, we bought a normal starter home, we bought two cars, and we had student debt, and we had mortgage debt, and we had things. There wasn't that much left to live on, and if you put a little bit away into savings, there wasn't that much left. And pursuing that path for the next 30 years would have potentially led us to have $1 million in the bank account or $1 million in the 401k by age 65. But the much better way to do that is actually the way we did it, which is while having a job, we started land flipping. We started an activity that in itself can produce the same or better profits within a matter of a few months or a year than you make in your job. So that's your exit strategy, but it's also your cash machine. So we identified land flipping as a cash machine. We built it up to $1 million in 18 months. We built it up to 8 figures in a matter of 3 years. And soon enough, obviously, it's got a cost. Soon enough, we were able to put our jobs, put all our energy into it. And now we got something that not just only pays our salaries or pays our lifestyle, but accelerates the cash in your life so quickly that you have extra cash available, massive extra cash available that you can now roll into other asset classes. So for us, that means we started land flipping to get out of our jobs, but we realized that land flipping was our cash machine. So we built it up bigger, bigger and bigger. And then soon enough, we realized that it spits out so much cash that we don't even need to live on, that we started that cash over into other asset classes. So in 2008, we started buying, 2009, we started buying single family homes, build a portfolio of single families. Then we started buying it in multiple markets. Then we started buying multifamily properties. And now we own almost 400 apartment units or houses that we own, that will bring in cash flow for the rest of our lives, for the rest of our daughter's lives, for the rest of her children's lives, down the road, without having to actually work a moment anymore in our lives. And that was possible to be implemented in a matter of 5 years, not 50 years as it's usually for most people.
Yeah, I mean, the big takeaway, I think, for anyone listening right now is to recognize your cash machine. So, Jack, I mean, you kind of just glazed over it. You probably know it's the priority to keep that machine building. For me, when I heard the offhanded comment for you, I had this variety of couple things that was kind of working, but my energy was being spread in too many directions because I was like trying to go down the 400 unit, path of rentals before I was quite ready. And then when I took all the energy and laser focused into the cash machine, which is like my house flipping company, Diamond Equity Investments, that's when the real growth started to happen. And for me, it was a big, big life changer. Jack, let's switch gears a little bit. So you've been doing this for a while and you've been in some up and you've been in some down markets, and we're recording toward the end here of 2020, and we are seeing around the country an abundance of new construction starts that are coming on the pipeline. The developers are kind of gearing up to build these post-COVID style new construction homes to satisfy quite a bit of pent-up demand as millennials are buying houses kind of in droves as we speak right now. With all that in the background, I'm curious for your observation whether the land market has improved, has it changed, or has it pretty much stayed flat throughout that entire period, or maybe just speak to the general shift or change, if any, in the land market in general throughout the United States, Jack.
So the land market is on fire right now. So particularly actually COVID has put the turbo boost on it. It's been absolutely crazy. I mean, if we look at it over the 18 years that we have been doing this already, we've seen obviously a big run up to the 2007 and 8 market crash. Land was fantastic in 2003, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then it crashed. But however, we still continue doing deals all the way through the crash. Land just shifts a little bit. We did a little bit more self-financing deals, and obviously our margins were a little smaller. But in a downturn, what you do is you just buy cheaper and you sell cheaper. So then when we came out of the downturn, we came back into a market. So we continued doing deals 2009, 10, 11, 12, 13. And then 2014, probably, the market started really accelerating nicely. And 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 were fantastic years for land flipping. And we thought like, okay, so what's going to happen? Is there's another crash? Well, then we're just going to go to another phase like that where we sell a little bit more, we sell a financing, we buy a little cheaper, sell a little cheaper. It's all good. It's all wonderful. But what happened when COVID hit is actually the exact opposite. It seems like COVID has like unleashed the demand for land to an entire new level. So we are, the properties are flying off the shelves. Our students, our coaches, everyone is reporting that. I say our own properties, so it's not just our own properties, but everyone else's properties too. They're like flying off the shelves. The demand is off the hook. It's like, and the reason for that, I think, is that this kind of big crisis has shown a lot of people that what life is all about. And a lot of people are like, you know what? I don't want to live in a high rise in New York City where I am down walking down the hallway and five people come out of their condos and they cough and I get COVID and I get sick. They want space, right? They want more space. So like in some markets, I have read that while the builders on the outskirts of town, like in the suburbs, they were selling houses at a steady pace. Right now, they're like sold out. Everyone went out to the suburbs. It's like, I don't mind driving, but I want my own garden. I want my own space around. I don't want to be stuck in an apartment or stuck in a small place with all these people around me. So the need for space has grown a lot through the pandemic, through COVID. And that translates into a high demand for our land. Like also people are not traveling that much internationally. And so a lot of RV sales have gone off the hook and they're like at all time highs. And so what do people with an RV want to do? They want to park it somewhere. They want to have a 10 acre ranch outside of town, right? And the three kinds of properties that we're focusing on are number one, infill lots. So basically lots in the city where the street is full of houses and there's a couple of empty lots. We love taking those. We sell those to a builder. Those builders are build a house on it and sell it to exactly those millennials you just talked about. And then the second kind of properties in the path of growth. So property on the fringes of the cities, perhaps a few miles outside of the city, in the where it's already a little bit more rural, but you're in town within 5, 10, 20 minutes. You're in town at your doctor's, your grocery stores, of the movie theaters and so on. So these are super attractive because first of all, the city's growing to them, but also you get more bang for your buck. You get an acre for $50,000 versus in town, you get a quarter acre for $100,000, right? So you get more space and an acre is the size of a football field. So there's plenty of space to put a house on that and have a garden around it and have dogs and have some fun around there, right? Have some space for, and then if you go further out, a third kind of property that we focus on are those 10 to 40 acre plus, mini ranches, as we call them. And they're absolutely attractive to all those people that really would rather live on a big piece of land. The RVers, the ATVers, the dirt bikers, the hikers, the hunters. So you go out there, you take your gear with you. They like bonfiring, they like bow and arrow shooting. They like, all this kind of stuff. And the entire RV ATV world that is on fire right now is all looking for properties like that. So all our properties, the demand has gone up in the city because there's a demand for houses like crazy. There's a shortage in the outskirts of town because people want to live close to the city, but no longer be perched into little condos in the city and in the rural area for all those people that want to escape for the weekend and just have a bunch of fun. So we are seeing the market of our lifetimes right now, and we expect that to continue because this COVID thing has been going on long enough to really change kind of the long-term patterns of human habits. Like you see it with the restaurants. Like I live in Arizona. All restaurants are open. There's very few restaurants that are still closed. You can do indoor seating and so on. Yes, you need very few reservations because every restaurant now over the last six to nine months, almost all restaurants have gotten used to doing delivery. And so much, we love eating out. But we eat out less, but instead we do pickup and DoorDash and things like that to have food delivered to us much more than we ever did. So this is kind of like these patterns are been ingrained in the human psyche, in the American human psyche for long enough now that I think that the patterns will continue. So we're gearing up our own land business even more because we are anticipating this boom in the land to continue for at least a couple, three more years. And then whatever happens, what happens? If there's another big crash, we're not afraid of it because we've already gone through one. And it has actually, land works in all market conditions, period.
Nice. Yeah, the pleasure of getting higher quality takeout food from some of these restaurants that even if they had takeout before, Jack, it would have been like slightly embarrassing to have to go in and pick it up because it was like unusual for human behavior. But now with COVID, it's like, you know, top-notch quality chef prepared food and like we're grabbing takeout like no big deal, and so was everybody else. So I think you're spot on with the changing human habits here. So I got three types of deals, and I think like there's probably a simple type of deal, right, that most people listening understand. It's, you know, buy it for 20 and sell it for 30 and collect a $10,000 assignment fee, or maybe buy it for 20 and sell it for 65 and do a double closing. And it's like a, you know, buy it low, sell it little higher type of mentality that makes sense for a lot of investors. Let's talk about, because I know you're good at these type of deals, but the kind of deals where you're having to use seller financing and you're building and setting yourself up for like long-term receiving of payments, which of the three deals you described would be most likely to have those like seller finance situations? And could you run through kind of an interesting example of how maybe you would structure one?
Sure. So I'll pick a different example. So like, typically, the seller financing deals are the deals that you get for below about 20% of market value, and because the down payment, because we love our deals to be structured the following way. The way we love them to be structured is that, let's say, here's an example of a deal we did last year. We bought a property for $5,000. It was an infill lot, was a zoned multifamily. And there was a smaller lot. You could put the, perhaps a fourplex or a sixplex on it. But, it was worth about $65,000 to $70,000. So what we did is, in this case, because we got it so cheap for literally less than 10 cents on the dollar, we turned around and we put it up for full market value, $65,000, with an ask for just a 10% down payment. So in that scenario, what we got was a property that was a property that was we got a $6,500 down payment on that property, which is more than what we paid for the property to begin with. And that's the way we like it, right? We like for the down payment to be close to or the same or more than what we actually pay for the property. And that makes for a perfect seller financing deal. So in this case, we got a $6,500 down payment, which covered the $5,000 we purchased it and the closing costs. So, and plus it gave us like an extra $500 in our pocket. So we bought and sold the property literally almost at the same time. We did buy it. We paid the $5,000 for closing costs. So we're in it for about six. Then we got $6,500 back, which makes us net $500. And then now we're getting for the next 20 years, since it was last year, for 19 years, we're going to get about $400 a month for the next 20 years. That adds up to over $110,000 in profits from that property. That is a perfect seller financing deal. A perfect, so if you let that sink in, and if you let that sink in, you know, we paid five for it, we're making $110,000 for it. That is over, what is that in terms of return of investment? That's something like a, 5,000 is like 50,000 is 1,000%. So this is like 3,000 to 4,000% return on our investment on that deal. I know that sounds crazy, but that's the kind of deals we like to do. An example of a cash deal is the opposite of it. Like, for example, one of our coaching students has a deal under contract with it now that is worth about $250,000, and he has it on contract for $125,000. That is not a good seller financing deal, because on a $250,000 deal, what are you going to get as a down payment? Probably anywhere between, let's say, 10 and maximum 20%, right? So if somebody puts 20% down on a $250,000 property purchase, they're going to put $50,000 down, and you're still out of your pocket. You're still out $75,000. So it's going to, even if that person pays $1,000 a month in mortgage on a $200,000 loan, it's going to take 8 years before you get your extra, or 6 years or 7 years before you get your $75,000 back. And only then do you actually start making money, like real profit. So as a result, what in that is not a seller financing deal. That's a cash deal. So if you pay a higher percentage of the property as a purchase price, or you have it on the contract for a higher percentage of purchase price of value, then you want to sell it for quickly for cash. If you have them on a contract for a very low percent of purchase of value, then you want to sell them with seller financing because you can literally triple, quadruple your money on that deal. Does that make sense?
It does. And would I be right? I mean, maybe not in a super heated market right now, but like on that $65,000 example, would it be safe to assume that it was an easier sale to make to this builder or this land collector at $65,000 because you're accepting seller finance and maybe like developers really only want to pay $30,000, $35,000, $40,000 cash in today's market? Or is that not the case?
100% correct. 100% correct. That's actually one of the beauty of this business, that when you sell with seller financing, if we would have sold that deal, that $65,000 deal, if we would have sold it for cash, we would have indeed probably listed it for 45 and sold it anywhere between 35 and 40. That is not a bad return, right? When you buy something for $5,000 and you sell it for $35,000, that's a $30,000 profit. That is fantastic. However, by structuring it such that we're selling it, actually I was wrong with the $4,000. I somehow had $200,000 in mind. The profit is like close to 2,000% on this deal because $5,000, $50,000, $1,000, you're making $110,000. So it's just about 2,000% return. But that's the point. By selling it with seller financing, you don't have to discount the price. You can leave the price at market value, but it sells quickly because there's many more people around in this world that can put down $6,500 and pay $400 a month. Then there's people who have $65,000 in their pocket and pay that in cash. So by offering seller financing, by offering terms, you have the world as your market. You have such many, many thousands of more potential buyers, and you only need one of them, right? So you have a much bigger market to sell to, and therefore you don't have to discount the price. But if you add up the profits now in the wholesaling world, it would have been $30,000. In the seller financing world, it's going to be $105,000 or $110,000 in profit on that deal. So you can literally triple your profit with seller financing and sell the properties quicker because it's a more affordable option for the buyer.
Is that buyer who bought that one, Jack, are they going to build and potentially take that loan out sooner, or are they kind of collecting it and it's like a garden and the neighbor next door bought that property?
So in this case, I do expect them to build at some point of time. They haven't started yet, and they're not allowed to based on our contract unless we give them permission to it, because the contract that we use to sell it is what's called the land contract, where we keep the ownership of the property. We keep stay on title until it's paid off, and then we issue a deed to them. So the only way that they can actually build is by going to a bank and getting them a construction loan on it. And in that case, the bank will cash us out because the bank will not allow for us to have basically the prime lien position on it. They want the buyer to be on title 100% and them giving them a first lien. So they won't subordinate to our contract. So in that case, I fully expect that it will be paid off probably in the next couple, 3 years, at which time, if you know how mortgages work, right, the first 5 years are almost only interest anyway. So if they started with $64,000 minus $66,000, like they started with a $58,000 loan, and then after 4 or 5 years, that loan still owes us between $53,000 and $55,000, depending on when they exercise it. So they're gonna pay $5,000 a month right now, let's say for 4 years, which is $16,000, and then they're still gonna pay us about $54,000, let's say. So that adds up to a total of $70,000 that we get after having received all our money back from the down payment. So it's either way, we're gonna do just fine with that deal. And if the worst case happens, then he stops making payments, then we can foreclose on them, and then we can resell the property again for a new down payment and a new cash flow stream. So whichever way you turn it, we got all our money on that thing already back with the down payment. We're enjoying a $400 a month cash flow stream without any tenants, toilets, and termites, and no midnight move-outs and no repairs. And eventually, either we keep that enjoying that for 20 years, or in a few years, we're getting cashed out at over $50,000. I'll take any of these options any day of the week.
Yeah, I'm in the fast cash world, and ours are all like, you know, it's a house and we're buying it. Maybe we paint it, maybe we sell it, maybe we wholesale it. And it's hard sometimes if I'm looking at a, you know, a $25,000 or $30,000 cash profit now, to forego and do all the work and take all the risk and, you know, maybe find termites and broken toilets and I end up not making the money. But you know, taking the 30 now versus the 50 later is something I would probably take the 30. But on the land where we don't have the physical risk, and also my purchase prices are often going to not work, so it's more like the example where it was a cash deal. But man, on the land you got it for 5,000. It really sounds a lot like the discounted note business where people are buying the bad mortgages and are foreclosing and getting them to kind of, you know, reactivate, and you kind of have these like quote unquote bonus paydays where you have a builder who, in the example, in 3 years, he gets his permits, he gets his loan, and now he's building, and you get taken out while it's still a piece of land, but you get this bonus payoff of, you know, 58, 59, 60,000 plus all the payments on the front end. So it really is a high quality asset production and cash production machine.
Right. And him been talking about the notes, that is another exit strategy. So could we now, remember, we are now the bank, right? And as you know that, but for the audience listening, like, remember, you are now the bank when you do a deal like that. So you receive the payments and you own the notes, you own the mortgage, you own the paper. So you can take that and sell that note to somebody else. So you now have a $58,000 note that you collect payments for a year. Now it's, let's say, $57,000, $56,000. You can go out to the public market and sell that note for $50,000 and get your, and cash yourself out that way, right? So that's another way you can do that too. Or if you want to sell it quicker, you can discount it quicker. Or if you vet it, this buyer, right, and you have their they have good credit and the down payment was good enough, you can probably sell it on day one for a really high nice multiple, because one of the beautiful things in land is that land itself often doesn't have any, the land itself often requires or demands a higher interest rate. So while the interest rates for houses right now are on the open market, if you want to buy a house, are like in the 2.5, 3.5%, on land, we are charging 12.9% interest to our buyers. Without any pushback, without any problems, because the buyers that, because banks don't typically lend on land. So there is no bank market to go on land. And we typically don't check our buyers' credit as long as they have a good enough down payment, we sell it to them. Because if down payment is, we have 18 years of experience. We know that if they give us at least $1,000 or a couple of $1,000 down, they won't default. Our default rate is 4 to 6%, similar to houses, to banks have. And so, but if you want to sell the note, you can vet that buyer a little bit more, get to make sure that they put a good down payment down, that they have good credit, and you can sell that note at almost at face value because the interest rate is already in the double digit. So it's really a crazy kind of fun business to work at.
Closest thing to printing money that I've heard in a while. So, Jack, what two books would you be recommending most often to your students, friends, or maybe someone who just was interested in real estate?
So, obviously the obvious one that everyone has read already, Rich Dad Poor Dad. I love that one. I read it probably like 7 or 8 times. If you're building a larger organization, I love a management book by the name of Turn the Ship Around. I love that book. It's about a United States Navy. It's a true story about a United States Navy officer who took over a submarine. But 2 weeks before he took over the submarine that he was planning to take over forever, he had studied everything you could study about that submarine. They gave him a completely different submarine. His command changed and his order changed. Mm. And he took over a completely different, 30 years older, completely different technology submarine. And he had to take that thing out on maneuvers and on a test and on things like that. And he developed an absolute fantastic management style out of that we in our company follow. Then there's one extra third book that I actually want to recommend, and that is a book that particularly in these times right now is a fantastic book, and it's a classic. It's called Who Moved My Cheese? And Who Moves My Cheese is one of the, when I had a job and I worked in the computer software industry, like an implementation software, I was a business analyst, that company went from 500 people to 7,000 people in a matter of 2 years. They hired like freaking crazy. And after a couple of successful years, while I was still working with them, they hit a snag and the dot-com bubble burst, and they had to let go of 3,000 people in a matter of a year. Luckily, they didn't fire me, but that was actually one of the points when I realized I got to have a second leg to stand on, because otherwise I'll be I can't live like that for the rest of my life, constantly in fear of potentially being let go by the next dot-com bubble burst, by the next whatever financial crisis, by the next coronavirus or whatever you name it be. So what the leader of that company, Thomas Siegel, was Siegel Systems, the company, he sent everyone in the company an electronic version of the book, Who Moved My Cheese? And what he wanted to do, and it made a huge impact on me, because what he ultimately did what that book talks about is that in life, we're very often getting settled and we're getting fat and lazy in our ways until somebody moves our cheese. It's the story of four little mice that found they're in the maze and they find a room full of cheese. And they're like, great. And then two of them get really fat and lazy and assume that the cheese is always going to be there. And two of them stay on their toes and they're going to learn and they're going to discover new methods and they're going to go find ways. And soon enough, the cheese dwindles until one day they go there and the cheese is gone. And two of them are like paralyzed in fear and paralyzed and not knowing what to do for the rest of what to do. And the other two have already in anticipation of that, scouted out the other areas, scouted out all the different things in life and figured out that just a few walks down the road, a few extra labyrinths over and a few hurdles over is a room that is 10 times the size, full of the best cheese in the world. So the point being is, when life throws you a curveball, you gotta move your cheese. You gotta be willing to move with the cheese and anticipate that. Don't settle on what you have accomplished right now. Don't settle on the thing. We're living in a world that is changing ever more rapidly, and you gotta move. You gotta anticipate that. You gotta be ahead of time. You gotta have your cash machine in place, and you gotta move such that that when the cheese gets moved, you don't starve. You already have identified where the next big room of cheese is. Love that book. It's a game changer book. It's so simple, so cute. Even on YouTube, there's a free video for it that somebody made a 16-minute summary of the book. You can watch it for free. It's just that hit home 15 years ago, and I've never forgotten that book since then.
Yeah, it's funny how hard hitting I imagine that would be right now for some people, Jack. I also I might have heard it from you and read it back when I heard that other thing from you, but I was at a point where I was going through financial and life challenges when I found that, and it made a lot of sense then. It's like, oh man, you know what? Because I was looking back and I did have a period of where things were working for me. You know, I'm sure people can relate to that. Things are working. COVID comes and now your restaurant is shut down and you're, you know, faced with the dwindling cheese, you know. You might have already answered the question, Jack, but the next one, and I ask all of my guests this, if you could share the crown jewel of wisdom with your younger self, what would that be?
It's slightly different. So Don't Move Your Cheese is an important one, but Who Moved Your Cheese is an important one. But I think the number one thing that I would want to tell somebody, to my younger self, is that to not ever believe that you're too young, too old, too inexperienced, too weak, not smart enough, or any of those things. Like, all my life, I always thought, like, at the beginning of my life, I'm 50 now, right? Beginning of my life, I always thought, like, oh man, I'm too young for this, right? I can't do this yet. I gotta earn my things here, and I gotta do this, and I gotta do that, and now all of a sudden I'm looking around and there's a whole bunch of people like a generation younger than I doing the stuff that I didn't even do it back then already. Right. So now I'm like, oh man, I'm starting to get too old for stuff. Just kidding. I'm not. I'm no longer believing this. There's no such thing like too young. I see kids now, they're 21 years. They're developing multifamily apartment complexes over and internationally. I see kids in their 20s when I was just not having any of that in my mind, just thinking I'm too young. I got to finish my college degree first before I can do anything and so on. They're just taking action. And luckily, through me meeting my wife and she being a big action taker and us having some of these experiences that I shared with you of like almost losing my job and then letting go of people, had some of these wake up calls that I feel like we got to do something, because otherwise I would have been one of those mice. And there's a chance that I would have been one of these mice that is like, oh, who moved my cheese? But because I luckily early enough got jolted a few things by life, I was able to adjust. We were able to adjust. We were able to gain those attitudes. But and look around and keep being ahead of the curve and keep looking forward. And so it's a combination of like who moved my cheese and implementing and internalizing that attitude. And then also the attitudes of the successful mice in the book, but also of no longer believing that I'm too young, that I'm too inexperienced, that I'm not good enough or anything like that, like everyone has, because it's just bullshit in your head. Sorry if I can say that word here. I don't know, but it's like, and it's just holding you back from stuff that you are ready to do right now. You just got to take it. You just got to believe in yourself and not just believe in yourself, but believe in yourself and then take the action to learn what it takes. Because in German, there's a saying that says we all cook with water. What that means is that nobody out there, not even the billionaires out there, have a secret magic formula sauce that gives them superpowers. We all have the same 24 hours in the day. We all have the same 7 days in a week. We all have the same 12 months in a year. What you can learn, every single piece of knowledge and skill that you need to learn to make it anywhere you want to go in life. You just need to get rid of the excuses and just start taking the actions.
I love it. I'm sure some people, including myself, have that same kind of thing. You know, it's like when I was 30, I was thinking like, man, I wish I would have known this when I was – look, even the question I just asked you about your younger self, it's like, man, if I would have started this when I was 25, it would have been such and such. Oh man, if it was, you know, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, and there's like this, you know, yearning for the past, I think sometimes is part of the human condition. And I have some wiser mentors, you know, than myself who along the way would tell me, hey, listen, Dan, you gotta stay present in the moment. Right now is the time to actually take action. And like, you gotta watch too, Dan, you know. Like, if you think about the past too much and you find yourself, like, you know, reminiscing and wishing it was the good old days, or you should have did this, or you wish it was then, said you got to watch because you're going to kind of feel some depression. And, you know, on the flip side of that, not staying in the right now in the moment, if you're thinking about tomorrow and, oh, man, I can't wait until I have such and such a number of units and I can go to such and such and, you know, it'll be so much better when I get, you know, 5 years, et cetera, et cetera. But when you're thinking about the future too much, it creates anxiety, and you can't do anything about creating the future yesterday or tomorrow. You have to take the action now to make for a better tomorrow. So that was something that helped me along the way, along those same lines. Pretty cool stuff.
Very wise words. Yes.
Pretty cool. So how can listeners get more Jack Bosch, maybe learn how to flip land for profits too?
Yes, absolutely. So we have students from all walks of life. We have students that were, we have truck drivers, we have medical doctors, we have night nurses, we have entrepreneurs, we have a lady that's 82 years old and crushing it. We got guys that are 19 years old and crushing it. We got we got married couples, we got father-daughter teams, you name it all. So this is really, if you want to make money without having to deal with houses, and most importantly, remotely is the key, because we got now students from Germany that do deals. My own brother now, after 18 years watching us, is finally getting into the game, has 14 deals on a contract, is selling his first deal.
Nice.
He's doing that in Germany while he can't even, from Germany in the United States, while he can't even come to the United States right now because of COVID, right? So, yeah, there's really something for everyone if you, no matter what point in life you are. So if you want to check it out, you can go to www.reilandprofit.com. Again, reilandprofit.com. reiprofits.com. So, and again, it's REI, that's the word land, like L-A-N-D, and then profit, like profits.com. And you get to watch your video and other things there, and really see how this all works. And then in addition, we also have go there first, and then we'll invite you into a Facebook group that we have where our students are active, where we literally get something like 15 to 20 student success stories every single week. This is like literally, that's like 2 to 3 success stories a day come through, because this market is on fire. It's simpler than house flipping, and nothing wrong with house flipping. I mean, I flip some houses and I rehab some houses and we have houses and so on. It's just less hassle. So, which everyone that is in house flipping will agree that there's hassle with it, right? So it's just a simpler way, to get more done. And the profits are the same, if not better.
Nice. Hey, it's been a really, really cool episode for me. Getting to talk to you and share this time with you on the show has been a real treat and pleasure. I got pages and pages of notes here, Jack. So I really appreciate you closing the door, you know, blocking out the distractions and giving up your time to come on the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
And thank you for tuning in to this episode of the REI Diamond Show. Remember to review and subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Just search REI Diamonds and click subscribe. You can sign up to receive new episode notification emails at www.reidiamonds.com, as well as check out the 167 episode archive of Wealth Building Real Estate Investment Jewels of Wisdom. I've made millions of dollars using the wisdom shared on the show over the last few years, and I hope you do too. That website again is reidiamonds.com. So my main business is buying and selling houses. 223 houses bought and sold in 2019, and 201 houses bought and sold so far in 2020. We currently have another 138 houses in inventory, either under construction, for sale, or sold and awaiting closing. So here are three ways that you and I can do business. Actually, four. Number one, if you buy houses in Atlanta, Chicago, or the Philadelphia region, go to dealswithroi.com and sign up for the correct buyers list there. We currently have 5 lists in total, separated by region, so please make sure you are on the correct market page for which you wish to find deals. Number two, if you are an accredited investor and you'd like to fund a deal or fund many deals, go to fundrehabdeals.com and sign up to receive private mortgage investment opportunity emails. Number three, if you have a deal for sale in either Atlanta, Chicago, or the Philadelphia region, please send me an email with the details. Happy to make an offer. And number four, I am currently seeking an A player to join my team here at Diamond Equity, working with sellers on the buy side, that is buying for our account, the buy side of the business. There is currently a position available in each market we operate. That's Atlanta, Chicago, Philadelphia, and we're also looking for somebody and maybe a few somebodies in the Jacksonville, Florida market, where we will be opening soon. If you'd like to check out details and for instructions on how to express interest, please go to dealswithroi.com. And click on the careers link tab on the menu. So that brings us to the end of the episode. Next up, we have Jason DeBono joining us on the show to discuss investing in real estate using an IRA. We dive deep into the private bank strategy, which high volume house flippers, including us here at Diamond Equity, use to quickly fund their projects, as we do here. Imagine funding your flips without having to do appraisals, applications, or even making monthly payments. That reality is discussed on the next episode. Tune in soon. In the meantime, keep closing deals, my friend. Catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.